Hello, you lovely humans. This is Michelle.
And Christy is here also, together forever.
Hey, listen, this episode and many that you're going to hear in the coming weeks was recorded weeks, if not maybe a month or two ago.
Prior to the coronavirus and everything going on in the world with quarantines and sheltering at home and craziness. So these episodes were recorded earlier. We had them planned out, scheduled, and edited, but we wanted to put this little blurb at the top so you all know that you won't hear anything about that in this episode, but it's not
because... Which might be nice. It's business as usual, people, regardless of what's going on. You all are doing your thing. We're doing ours. We're still providing you with the content and information you need and that you probably want to hear, but we love you. We are going through this with you.
And we hope you enjoy today's episodes, and we will keep putting them out for you.
Keep on keeping on, everybody. Here you go.
The Big Wedding Planning Podcast.
Just two wedding planners tearing it up. Listen, learn.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Big Wedding Planning Podcast, a show for anyone involved in planning a wedding. We want you to learn something valuable and be entertained at the same time. My name is Michelle Martinez.
And I'm Christy Matthews. Thank you, as always, for joining us. We're very excited about today's episode. Mm-hmm. I've had this experience a couple times, Michelle, where I'll see something like that viral video of the two grooms dancing. Remember?
Yes.
And they did the dirty dancing thing.
Yes.
I'll see it and I will text you and be like, we have to find these people. We have to have them on the podcast. I love them. I love their story. They're going to have something to say. It works with our whole vibe. And then a couple times that's actually happened and it's very exciting. I feel kind of like we're making connections without we don't have a publicist or a manager or anybody helping. So it
Not
feels
yet.
Good when we actually get somebody on the other side.
You always like, find these. Yeah. You always find these.
And this is one of those episodes where I read this really awesome, very timely, I think, article in the Washington Post. I must've read it on my phone. And, it is the title of the article is "He Said Yes, Why Aren't More Women Proposing to Their Boyfriends?" So we have the writer of the article, Molly Bludoff Indelicato, and also her now fiance and partner, Greg Lynch. So we're going to be interviewing the two of them about this new,
we this can say quote, it's like,
yeah.
He said yes.
Yeah.
He said yes.
We don't want it to be a trend, but it is trending right now that engagements and proposals, along with 100 other wedding traditions, are being turned inside out or on their side to meet the needs of today's modern couple. So welcome, Molly and Greg.
Hello.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
Where are you guys right now from?
We're outside of Washington, D.C.
Okay.
Oh, okay. All right. Cool. Cool. And how old are you both?
32.
And I'm 30.
Okay. Cool. Just want to know what we're dealing with here, people.
I think we can. You are firmly in the millennial definition, right?
We are, but we don't let our ages define us.
No. Sure, sure.
Number.
Neither do I.
Nor do I. Okay. I still feel like I'm 22. Really, in my mind and in my spirit, I am.
No, I feel 30. I'm very excited about it. Love
30. 30s are awesome.
I felt 30 for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think 30s are the best. I loved my 30s.
Give us a quick history then of you two, the relationship. We know your ages. So how long you've been together and, you know, do you live together? And also, we would love to know if the topic of like potentially getting married or spending your lives committed to each other, how that had come up or if at all prior to the big proposal.
you do the first part and I'll do the second part.
Wait, which was the first part? The relationship part?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, we've been together for about 7.5 years. We've lived together for more than 4 years.
I think the article says 5 years.
5 years. Okay. Yeah. So,
well, which is it? Is it what the article says?
It's what the article says. I fact checked.
Okay. Okay.
We're just math on the fly.
You are career wise. You're a writer. Is that right?
Yes. I'm a journalist.
Okay. You're a journalist. Yes.
I'm a okay. Journalist.
Okay. Sorry. Go ahead, Greg.
Yes. I'm a former journalist turned web developer. So.
Oh,
do you work from home now, Greg?
No, Molly works from home. I work in an office. Yeah.
I thought if you were both working from home, that can be a lot. Just from
experience. We kind of did that. We lived in Peru together for a year and Molly worked from home and I was on leave and we made it through that. So we knew we could make it through a lot, that we could
be
together all the time and still not be tired of each other. So that was a good.
It's a good indicator.
It's a good indicator that we're compatible.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay, so 7.5 years together, live shacking up for 5 years, right?
Yeah. Awesome. And you both have professional careers, like you're both independent adults. I mean, I think this is part of the myth of how people used to hook up and get married, you know, and that the woman might be coming right from her father's home and hadn't lived together. They weren't yet into their professional careers, but both of you are like real adults, even though you're young. We can say you're real adults.
For real.
Thank you for calling us young also.
Also, yes. And we do own a coffee table together as well as a waffle maker.
That's great.
Those are Molly's criteria for adulthood.
And we do have 2 cats as well. So that just takes it to the next level of
adulthood. Holy shit. This is crazy.
You're just like hardcore adulting right
now.
Yeah. Yeah, and I was going to say, if you've never traveled together, make sure you do that. But you lived in Peru, so that counts. So you've really killed 2 birds with 1 stone with that Peru decision. However,
they are qualified for this job of marriage.
Yeah.
Well, you've got the skills.
Hopefully, we give you our stamp of approval.
There you go.
Our work there is done.
That's all we needed, actually. We were waiting before.
Okay. What about the idea or the concept of marriage versus just continuing to live together? How have those conversations happened?
Yeah. So Greg was actually ready, I think, to get married before I was. And I had never really believed in marriage. It wasn't something I was interested in. And it was something that I made quite clear to him from the very beginning of our relationship, actually. And he was, you know, I think you were, you know, a little sad, but of course, you know, you wanted a relationship to continue and you're like, if this is, you know, if we're not going to get married, that's fine with me.
It's not a deal breaker.
Yeah. As long as we can be together.
Being together was more important than what we
called it. That's all I care about. Yeah. And things really changed when, we moved, out of the country together, to Peru. And I don't know. I was never into the whole falling in love thing. I was never into the whole marriage thing. And then Greg literally just changed my outlook on all of that. And it's not a matter
being with me,
being with you,
not me making some kind of argument.
No, not making
a PowerPoint presentation every other day.
Yes,
convince you.
But I remember we had just gone to Cusco, which is very high altitude, and we were both suffering from altitude sickness. It was terrible. We had to go on a big trip very early the next morning, and we're just holding each other in bed, just feeling so incredibly sick. And I was like, I turned to him and I was like, you know, this is a horrible experience, but I'm so glad I'm here with you. And I want to do this with you forever. And I want to like have the good times and the bad times, but as long as it's with you, it's okay. Yeah. And I think that's when things really changed for me in terms of marriage. It still took a few years for me to actually propose, but that's when things really, when the switch flipped and the narrative changed.
That makes sense.
That is also really, really awesome.
That whole year, or however long you spent in Peru, I'm assuming that you didn't know a ton of people where you were. So there was a little bit like your world, your village got a lot more just the two of you for a while, right? So I can imagine that also would either make or break a young couple, like you had the, you know, epiphany, like, I do want to do this, even though we're miserable and I feel like I'm going to throw up and this is horrible, but I'm so, it's so much better because you're here.
So romantic.
You could have had the opposite, you know, just like this whole year here, this is not going to work.
Yeah. I mean, we were pretty serious going into it. I mean, the fact we moved in together for a few months before we went to Peru to make sure that
we wouldn't kill each other.
Yeah. That we could live together. So we wanted to try to minimize the potential stressors going into it. So we were pretty serious at that point anyway of, you know, I'm going to take a year off from my job and move to a new country with Molly. So it's not, you know, we were at that point, I think about a year and a half or two into our relationship. So we were pretty serious at that point. So I think the Peru experience kind of, there was the sort of compressed nature of like, we went through a lot of experiences in a shorter period of time and we
kind of
rely on each other and get each other through a lot of stressful situations in many different aspects. So, you know, we probably would have ended up in the same place, but that certainly, I think, compressed the timeline of just how much we could trust each other and how confident we were in our relationship and each other and things like that.
Yeah. I think if Michelle and I mean, we should tell all of our listeners that if you have the opportunity to move to a foreign country with your partner for several months before you get engaged, you should, right? That should be our just like blanket advice. Just like pick a country, move there and see if you make it.
I think that would be fun and that would be awesome. And I know Jose Luis would do that in the heartbeat right now. He wants to move everywhere we visit. But I really connected with your story that you told Molly of when you guys were sick in bed, right? And then that was like the factor because I feel like I had that similar experience with my husband, now husband. We had been together for a while. I loved him and everything. And I was all about the traditional, he's going to propose this, that, and the other. And I was like, we're going to get married. But it wasn't until we had this really horrible, he had a really bad accident and, you know, we were in the hospital and he was going to like, and then he recouped and I was taking care of him doing some things that I would never have, like seeing parts of his body that it was crazy. But I remember as I was, you know, helping him and nursing him through this, doing these things and thinking to myself, this is not bothering me. Like, I want to do this for him. Like, this is probably one of the worst times in our lives together. And this feels right somehow. I think a lot of people have those moments, right? When you're like, when it's not all peaches and cream and la, 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 it's like something shitty is happening or like you feel horrible and you're like, oh yeah, I want to do this with you. Like, I'm comfortable doing this with you. That's pretty awesome. Pretty awesome. So fast forward, where the hell did you do this proposal, by the way? Were you at like in this, it looks like you're in outer space. It looks like you're on a spacecraft. What is this?
It is a
modified 727.
There we go. Modified 727.
Ooh.
In the air. It's a somewhere in 100-mile radius of the airport inside of DC.
But it was, there was no gravity.
Yeah. So they do these things called parabolas and essentially where the plane shoots up in the air at a very steep angle and then comes back down at another steep angle. And that's when you experience zero gravity and you're essentially, you float around the cabin of the airplane. It's an amazing experience.
Wow. People pay to do that, Michelle.
I was like, why would you do that?
Michelle's like, she would pay to never have to do that. So it's
that's
like
crazy.
It's a tourist. I mean, it's pay to anybody that's healthy can do that.
Yeah. So a lot of scientists do it and to run, if, you know, if they can't, you know, get to the International Space Station, they do it to run experiments in zero gravity. But then also there's the tourism aspect of it, which is what we did, which is paying to have that zero gravity experience. Yeah.
So when
how
you
long
were thinking
is it?
About,
I'm oh, sorry, like from the time you board to the time you're done, how long of an experience is this? And does your stomach, like, is it like when you're in a roller coaster and like your stomach is like separate from your body?
I didn't get, so for the, there is a lot of, when you're going up, there's the G force pushing against you. So it's a lot of fun. You have to lay on the ground. And it's a lot of fun to try and lift your limbs because you suddenly become incredibly heavy and it's very, very difficult to move. And then afterward, your body just starts to float up off the ground by itself, which is fantastic. And the, your automatic response is to try and swim because that's the closest thing you've got to zero gravity, but that doesn't work at all. You just look ridiculous. So throughout half the video, you just see me like frantically like swimming through the air and attempting to move. But yeah, it's great. You bounce off the ceiling, they put you into a ball and then they toss you around. They threw water in the air and you try to catch it. M&Ms. It was great. The whole thing was like what?
It was a half an hour for the weightless portion. And it took, what, maybe like 30, 45 minutes to get, because we had to get like over the water to an empty piece of airspace.
Yeah.
Wow.
And there were like, what, three or four groups of people? Probably fewer than 50 people in total.
Yeah. You have a video of this?
Yeah.
They gave you a video? That is really cool.
They have GoPros on the...
Did you just booked it for you guys and then told Greg, like, guess what we're doing tomorrow?
Or there's a whole story.
Go ahead. No, you can tell this part.
So I had received an email at some weeks earlier from a friend of mine who lives in Chicago saying that he was going to be at the Dulles Airport for a layover for a flight. And he wanted to see us and another friend of ours who's in D.C., so we were making plans to get brunch and
this is all made up, by the way. I've like told this person to email Greg.
You've pulled the string
to plan it. And one of the problems I ran
elaborate
into
ruse.
Elaborate ruse I ran into in the beginning is he's like, well, I can only email Greg like 3 days before because it's just not my style to email him a few weeks beforehand and he would know something is up. No, Greg would not know anything is up, and all it did was give me panic attacks up until the day he actually emailed him, because Greg kept trying to plan other things mm-hmm. in the time that I was supposed to propose to him. So that was incredibly stressful, but continue. You finally made it to the...
So yeah, we went to the airport hotel, which I was like, okay, I don't know why we're getting brunch here, but you know, he's got a short layover, that's fine. Because I kept trying to get us to go somewhere else.
Yeah, he's like, can't we go somewhere nicer? I'll just pick you up from the airport and we'll go somewhere else. It'll be
Silver
lovely.
Diner, yeah. So we get there and I'm looking around. And I'm like, I don't see him. Should we get a table? And then Molly's looking around. I figured trying to look for them too. But in actuality,
I was trying to find the people who were supposed to be on my flight because they were in this little hidden room and downstairs in the hotel and I couldn't find them. And I was very nervous as well because the flight had been canceled several times beforehand. So I tried to do this before and I was very nervous until I saw somebody else wearing like a NASA t-shirt. And I was like, okay, follow this guy. He knows what he's doing. And I turned to Greg and I said, no, there is no brunch. We're going on a zero gravity flight. And he just looks at me. He's like,
I had a bit of disbelief until I saw like the actual like sign-in table yes. and the staffers wearing their flight suits.
I think it took him until he put the jumpsuit on to actually really believe that we were doing this.
No.
So did it occur to you that she's going to propose? Like she planned this all so she could propose? Or was it just like, what an awesome
thing? It was a double
thing.
Whammy of surprises and yeah. deception.
That's my favorite kind of surprises.
The other great thing is that I couldn't figure out how to hide the ring appropriately because I talked to the people who run the flight beforehand and they said, make sure that your ring is like in an actual box because it will float away. And
oh, God.
I don't want that to happen. And so I had to bring an engagement ring box through TSA. And I'm assuming like, oh, Greg is going to see this. He's going to put two and two together and figure it out. No.
Give me a little credit here. So she told me her best friend is from Germany. She said, oh, this is something my best friend gave us as a good luck charm. It's a German, you know, a German
good luck charm. Good luck
master of deception, this one. So, huh?
And you can't open the box because the good luck will come out, obviously.
Not being an expert in German good luck.
Good. You thought of everything. Her. Yes. Why wouldn't
I'm
you?
I'm not just some gullible rube.
Yeah.
No.
Well, I'm very
gullible rube, but I'm not just some gullible rube.
So you get all the way there on the plane. It takes off. You still.
It doesn't take off initially. We're waiting on the tarmac.
We were stuck on the tarmac for quite a while to get approval to take off, which is why the other flights had been canceled. So at that point, I was like, okay, if this doesn't happen, I'm turning to him right here in the aisle of the plane and I'm proposing that way because I can't take the pressure anymore.
Yeah.
But eventually, I think it was like 45 minutes, eventually we took off and I was like, oh, thank goodness.
Were you at all worried that he might say no?
There was always a little teeny tiny part of me that worried that he would say no. But honestly, no, I wasn't like actually worried.
You didn't care. You're like, I don't care. I'm going to do this. I'm going to ask him. Yeah.
Yeah.
We basically knew that the assumption was that Molly was going to ask me at some point, mm-hmm. and that I was afraid if it came to me asking her that she made clear that she would reject it if it was not an appropriately amazing proposal.
No, I'm like, if he tries to propose to me on like a Jumbotron or at a restaurant, that's not my style. So I was like, if you do that, like you're not getting the answer you want.
Yeah. So I was really hoping that she would propose because I knew that she would have the best proposal. I couldn't top it. And I was right.
Okay.
I couldn't have topped it.
Hey everybody, we have a new sponsor. We're so excited about it because we like this product. Thrive Cosmetics is a beauty brand with a bigger than beauty mission that goes far beyond skin to empower women everywhere. They're based in Los Angeles. They are founded by a makeup artist and product developer. Thrive Cosmetics, by the way, it's cosmetics with a C-A-U-S-E, makes high-performance, vegan, 100% cruelty-free formulas without the use of parabens or sulfates.
Why is Thrive Cosmetics so awesome? The high-performance products that we love, and we're going to tell you about two of them specifically that we love so much, and the fact that they're cruelty-free, completely vegan and cruelty-free, and then the giving back cosmetics, as Michelle mentioned, cause, C-A-U-S-E, medics. They're committed to causes that help women to thrive. Women emerging from homelessness, surviving domestic abuse, and fighting cancer, just to name a few. For every product purchased, Thrive Cosmetics donates. Women helping women. We're into it. What's not to love about that?
So into it.
The box of goodies that we got, we just like devoured. And one of my favorite products is their 3-in-1 Bright Balance Cleanser. I love the feel of it. I love the smell of it. And I'm using it every night as a face wash, but also sort of leaving it on. So it's kind of like a mask, which was one of the hints on the bottle. So cool. So refreshing. I am so into it.
I am like obsessed with their mascara, the liquid lash extensions. And this is why people, because I barely have eyelashes and I've tried the, you know, like the putting on the fake ones and keeping them on for, you know, a couple months. They make me crazy. But when I put this on, seriously, I mean, can you see like I have eyelashes
and
it stays on and thank you. And I love it. And it's not glumpy or anything. Like the brush on it is amazing.
Yeah, it's awesome. So it totally looks like you have lashes on.
Thank you. Okay, so listen, this is very important, everybody, because they're a new sponsor, A, and B, they need to know that you heard this here on the Big Wedding Planning Podcast, okay? So start thriving and help women in need today by going to thrivecosmetics.com/bigwedding and use the code BIGWEDDING and you are going to get 15% off your first purchase.
That's Thrive, CAUSEMETICS.com/bigwedding. That's how they know that we sent you code BIGWEDDING for 15% off. ThriveCosmetics.com/bigwedding, code BIGWEDDING.
Thank you so much, Thrive.
Clearly you said yes. This was an awesome, you know, experience, adventure. I was reading the article, Molly, and you're a journalist and you've written some pretty impressive stuff for some very impressive outlets. But I thought
I always find amazing, and I'm sure you do, when you can like dive deep in a subject. Mm-hmm. Like Christy and I have said, we've had we had a feminist author on who wrote a book all about this and kind of talked about like what some traditions that people still use for weddings today, like where those actually come from and how crazy it is that we still use them, you know, mindlessly, just like, oh, I just want to do it because like it just is like, I want that, right? But you kind of dove deep into the history of actual proposals in your research, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about like why traditionally it's men who propose to women?
Yeah, the gender stereotype part makes sense. And if that makes sense, then your relationship is swapped. You were the one that wasn't ready to commit as previously, you know, well, men have to put down their Game Boys or whatever the fuck that guy said. But like, you know, the idea of like men need to come around and women are immediately eager to get this show on the road. But that wasn't your situation. So you took it into your own hands.
Yeah. So there's like two different main aspects of it. And the first one being that marriage used to be, and in some cases still is, very transactional. And so the purpose of the man proposing to the woman, especially with a ring, was basically saying, you know, I can provide for you. I can provide for our future family. And that's why I'm getting down on one knee and giving you this, you know, this
like
ring.
My word. Right?
Yes, giving you my word and giving you the assurance that you'll be, you know, taken care of financially. And because men made more money than women, it kind of tracked that the man would be the one proposing. And then nowadays, we have a habit in our society of conditioning women to kind of be in the background and for men to be the one pushing relationships forward and for them to be the dominant and to have taking that control over relationships. And women are not taught to be the ones to push forward. And then there's also the kind of tired trope of, oh, the man is scared of commitment. And so he needs to be ready and he needs to be the one to propose to really prove that he's ready to get married. So there's all three of those are kind of intertwined when it comes to the actual marriage proposal and why men are still more likely to be the ones proposing.
Yeah, I don't think everybody loves this idea of women proposing. It's the same group of people that don't love the idea of women getting paid just as much or women working outside the home just as much or women making more of the financial decisions in a family situation. And it's very generational. It's like, you know, my parents' generation and older. And I think it's really on the like forefront of politics right now too with it's still political where, you know, whereas this was all like equal voting rights and all that was fought for a long time ago and relatively long time ago for us, but it's not done. It's not like this revolution is over.
No, I agree that with that. I think of myself, right? And Christy, I don't know if Lance proposed to you, if you both, it was like I know it was a shotgun kind of wedding, but like I wanted to be proposed to because that was all I knew. And I didn't think about what the history was of it. I didn't think about, you know, what does this mean? What does it signify? I just thought, I want that. Like, I want him, I can't wait for him to propose to me because that's all I knew. And I think that now, you know, like I think about my kids, my son and my daughter, like, what if we just started off on this clean slate and there was no, you know, societal suggestion of, you know, well, the man traditionally proposes to the woman, right? What if it was just like this clean slate? What would happen naturally? What would they gravitate toward? Hopefully it would just be, I'm ready right now and I love you and, you know, I'll do this. I'm, you know, whoever gets to it first, right? It's just interesting. And I do want to say because as I just said, like my husband, he proposed to me. I wanted him to. Maybe I want something different for my kids now. I just want them to be happy, do whatever they want, right? That's all. That's all I care about. But I do want to say that those listening, if he proposed to you, we're not, you know, coming down on you by in any way, shape, or form. It's just such an interesting concept that this is so odd and out of the ordinary that it's catching people's attention like us. And now we're, you know, doing this episode on it. It's just, it's fascinating to me.
Yeah, I think for us, it wasn't about sort of, you know, sort of spitting in the face of tradition or just sort of being contrarian. It was thinking of what our situation is, what, you know, being thoughtful about what we wanted, what was right for us. So, you know, we would say to anybody else, you know, there's not a right or wrong way as long as you know why you're doing it and kind of can come into it clear-eyed and you know that you're on the same page. That's the most important thing.
Yeah. And if a couple does want, they, you know, they've talked about it and they do want the man to propose, I think that that's, you know, that's fine. That's their decision. It's just, I want everybody to have the option to be the one to propose.
And that either decision would have meaning behind it.
Yeah.
Rather than just, oh, this is the way we should do it and have to do it.
Don't go through the motions.
Yeah. And that bleeds into all aspects of wedding planning, because there are so many times where we're getting emails every day from listeners like, I'm having a pretty traditional wedding, but I don't feel comfortable about X, Y, and Z. How do I do something different? How do I break it to my parents? How do we express our vows in a different way? So it's the idea that every choice you make for your wedding and kind of setting the tone for your marriage is one that is infused with meaning rather than this is what my sister did and this is what my mom did, this is what my best friend did, so I'm going to do it that way.
Yep.
I was wondering, Molly, in your research, because this is really interesting to us and we've done episodes on gay weddings and transgender weddings and how all of that is also changing the entire wedding industry and how things are done. And people are taking, they're following what some gay couples have been doing as like new traditions. So in your research, or do you just have any thoughts about in kind of diving into this, how marriage equality and legalization started to change the story a little bit?
Several of the experts I spoke with said that we really have the LGBTQ community to thank for a lot of the progressive changes in, you know, even in just, you know, heterosexual marriages, because this community is showing us that there are different ways we can go about doing things and there is no one right way to make things happen. And so by, you know, setting that example for us, we can, you know, we can really look to that community for inspiration and they're paving the way and making things a lot easier for everyone else, which is just, I mean, absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. It's a very exciting time in the wedding industry, I have to say. And I've been in this industry for almost 20 years now. Like, it's so exciting for me to see all of these changes. And so, like, yes, something different.
Yeah, we love it when we hear from anybody that's made kind of a big, I mean, someone will email us and be like, I chose my wedding dress and you guys really get, you know, I felt empowered listening to your podcast and it's blue. And we're like, yay, yes! Love that. And it's, you know, in the big scope of things, it may seem like a little, oh, that's okay. It's just the color of a dress. It doesn't change much, but
it's huge.
It's a big decision because of everything it symbolizes and this like weight of traditions that is on our shoulders. And on top of all that, there's the comparison game, which I'm sure if as you two are planning your weddings now, you might have tried to avoid some of the trappings of, you know, all these ways. And I love them, but like Pinterest and Instagram and all the blogs and all the networks that you can just like go down the rabbit hole and be like, I thought I had a clear idea of what I wanted and now I'm all screwed up because I've looked for 2 hours. Yeah.
There is so much. Hey, so when did you propose? Was this in December or when was it?
This was
September 29th.
September 29th.
That's a really great day. That's my son's birthday.
Tell us about afterwards, when you guys started to tell your friends and family from both of your perspectives, in the article, it said you got some pushback or people asking you like, why you, or did, what was that like even for you, Greg, too, for both of you?
Well, I don't want to call any specific people out, family members or
sure. Sure.
Just say their first and last name and address and social security number. Yeah, address
on social security number. I will say, well, focusing on the internet, comments on the article were quite judgmental, I would say. But on the other hand, we did get quite a few couples messaging us. Actually, I had a couple of girlfriends message and say, you know, I never thought that this was an option. And now I think I'm actually considering, you know, that I'm going to be the one to propose. And then Greg told his office at work that how he'd gotten proposed to. And he had some coworkers come up to him and say, yeah, wow, like we didn't know that this was an option, that this was a thing. This is awesome. And I think that I'm going to do it myself. And so, you know, just the fact that
that's exciting.
There's, you know, there's changes just in our lives that we yes. can see. And so it'll, you know, if everyone read the Washington Post article, then it can make quite a difference.
We also heard from some folks who, whether a decade or even further back, friends of ours who had proposed to their yeah. now husbands. So.
Oh, so those stories came out like, we did that too.
We did that too, yeah.
And
yeah.
then when I reported the article, there were a lot of people who were like, oh yeah, no, I was the one to propose and it was so weird for the time, but like I made this happen. And I was like, ah, you're awesome.
That is really cool. That is awesome. So did you submit to the Washington Post or did they ask you to write this or how did that happen?
So as a freelance journalist, I will come up with story ideas and I'll pitch them to different editors. And so I pitched them to my editor at the Washington Post and she said, yeah, let's do this. Let's go for it. And I wrote the story then.
Your hair is so cute. The color in it, by the way.
Oh, thank you. That makes me
and that photo, like it, that's awesome hair.
I hope we can share that photo. We because I obviously people want to see, well, we'll include links to the article, but did you have a professional photographer with you or was that part of the experience that they did on the plane?
That was part of the flight, which was awesome. Cause then we didn't have to have engagement photos. We just got them.
Yeah.
And that was a good shot too. You both look so good.
It's one less thing for you to worry about too, Molly, to plan.
Yes. And one less thing to plan.
Molly contacted the photographer. I learned later, contacted the photographer ahead of time and gave him like a little gift bag of something. I didn't know like what this was.
Yeah, I contacted the photographer beforehand and told him that I was going to be proposing and when should I do it and could he watch out for it. And then when I met him, I just gave him a thank you like gift bag and right in front of Greg. And Greg was like, why are you giving this random person a gift bag? And I was like, oh, you know.
I just figured this was Molly trying to make sure that she got the best photos of anybody on the plane.
Yeah, that he paid a little
drive in there with like a with the return envelope and stuff like that. So she had planned it all out.
Well, and it sounds like it didn't happen the first couple times you planned it. So you had time to like troubleshoot the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Okay. That is awesome. The picture is really cool and grabbed us. There are other famous or powerful or notable women that have proposed. You included some of them in the article, and I didn't know about the ones that you included either. Can you share some of that? Or did you contact them directly?
I didn't. No, I found it via the internet. You know, I actually can't remember, so you'll have to read them off for me, but I know that one of them is running for president. So she proposed to her
Elizabeth Warren proposed, right?
Elizabeth Warren proposed to her.
And husband. Then Somersall, what was the first name on? I'm scrolling through. Is it Pat Somersall? She proposed and said it was not acceptable really at all back then when she proposed. And that there was a lot of pushback as well, which I can imagine. And then there was one woman, Sarah Shearer, that it was in her family, it was a tradition for the women to propose.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool because there was a rumor had it that her grandmother actually proposed to her grandfather, which is really cool.
Very cool. Awesome. And then, you know, Britney Spears to Kevin, was it Kevin Federline? Oof.
That one
not so great. But
the comments that you got were kind of, I mean, some of them are like scathing and sound ignorant about whether they read the whole article or not. I don't, just the idea of a woman proposing is almost offensive to some people, that they think like you should know better almost.
Oh, wow. I didn't even read these.
I would obsess over comments. That's my problem. I obsess over some reviews that we get. Like, as a writer, you put it out there. Do you even look? Does it bother you at all? Some people are like, oh, I never read the reviews. And I'm like, how can you not?
Yeah, I don't know. I've been doing this for so long. And one of the main rules is you either have to read all the comments and respond to them, or you read none of them. And so I go with the more time saver one of I don't read any of the comments. But my future mother-in-law read them and was happy to fill me in on quite a few of the sillier ones.
Yeah.
So I did hear about them, and it just seems like ignorance, mostly, yeah. Not reading the entire article also. And then people's, quote unquote way of life being threatened. And so not being open to new ideas, and which is really unfortunate, but I also think it reached the people it needed to reach. So,
yeah.
Tell us about the idea of benevolent sexism. I have heard of that and heard, the idea of like opening doors and I'm just being a nice guy and why can't, so I think I know the kind of big vague definition, but since you cited it in the article, what did you find and how would you, like, what would you share with our listeners about that?
Yeah, so I actually was not familiar with the concept of benevolent sexism under that specific name, on that term. And
what
so
term did you know it as?
I just knew it as, sexism in general.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, parsed it out.
Chivalry.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of this comes down to benevolent sexism is also known as chivalry. And sometimes it's really easy to call out people on sexism because it's very blatant. But when it's under the guise of chivalry and, kind of intertwined with things like love and caring and helpfulness and thoughtfulness, it's a lot harder to kind of pinpoint and be like, no, this is sexism. And so the examples that, I gave were, like pulling out a chair or opening the door for a woman, just because it takes away agency and creates this inequality. Now, Greg opens the door for me, my car door, every time I get into the car.
And really?
He does, yes. And he will open the door and say, would you like some benevolent sexism today with your car ride? So I would say that there's a lot to be learned, myself included, when it comes to benevolent sexism. But in terms of marriage proposals, the reason that it's very difficult to call out is just because it is coming from, a place of love. And so it's difficult to kind of differentiate, in my opinion.
That's interesting. I actually... Benevolent means it's well-meaning,
harmless.
Yeah, it's kind. I guess the opposite would be blatant, right? Yeah.
Right. I think it can be harmless. I think if you're not aware of it, I think that's when it becomes an issue, because I think that, you do need to be aware of making the decision marriage proposal wise, as long as somebody isn't wanting to do something and they think they're unable to do it because of this tradition, because of this benevolent sexism, that's when it becomes a problem. I think that when you're very open about it and you talk about it, then becomes less of an issue.
Yeah, I think it sort of, because I'd opened her car door for years because she had made that clear that she liked that. And I think it's as simple of, it's not to say don't do it, but it's saying, may I open this door for you? May I get your chair? To offer that choice and not take away the agency so that your partner can decide, basically. Would you like...
You're asking permission, may I do this for you?
Yes. Yeah. Would you like this? And then you get a sense of whether they would or they wouldn't. And if they don't, that's nothing against you. It's just their preference.
Christy has two sons, young boys, and I have a boy and a girl. Christy, have you ever educated your sons on opening a door?
Well, I straight up tell them to open the door for me when we're like walking in somewhere and I have groceries in both hands and like the dog leash and a backpack and, or we're going to the gym. That's always like, those doors are really heavy. And so I'll be like, Joey, but if there's a man behind me or a woman or a family or anybody behind me, I'm do tell them like it is polite if you're the first person at a door to open it for everybody behind you.
Yeah.
And that example is at the gym when everyone's trying to get their ID out and they're finally on that track. But I have, like I said, I'd heard of benevolent sexism in that, like when I said it was harmless, the word, it's like a cutesy way of saying just, you know, it has to do with patriarchy. So benevolent sexism, the person that is doing it thinks it's harmless. And often they might say, my heart is in the right place. I'm just, you know, but what about if you're walking down the street and somebody says, you should smile more.
Ew.
You're beautiful. You should smile. And it's like, this is my face. And back off, you know, whatever it is. It's like that comment in the 70s or 80s, I don't think most women, you know, we might have bristled inside, but I don't think most women were turning around and being like, you know, fuck off or don't talk to me or whatever. But more and more, as times change, people start to bring attention to or call out what was always there. And now we're seeing this with Time's Up and Me Too and like big things are happening. And I think in 20 years, 30 years, we're going to look back on this time. And Michelle, you and I will be able to remember like this is when we were really in the thick of raising our children to be good adults, like the lessons learned. And you guys, you'll remember it because you'll be like, that's when we were planning our wedding. And boy, was that a crazy adventure or whatever. But I do think history will show that this is a really big revolutionary time in the way that the tides are changing in our society. And your proposal was a little bubble of that, I think. And I was wondering if you think, having researched this, that, like, do you agree with me that times are changing? Is this going to be more normalized in, you know, 10 or 20 years for women to propose? Or will it still feel kind of like there's a few of you out there, but it's the exception to the rule?
Well, the research that I looked at does say that most, you know, the majority of women still do prefer the idea of the man proposing to the woman. But, you know, like I said, just from anecdotally hearing other people, I do think things are changing. I do think that the option is now out there. And we do have a lot of different communities to thank for that. So yeah, I think that you're right. I think we are in the thick of things. And I think the change is coming and is already started.
Now that you've started planning the wedding, right? When's your wedding date?
October 18th. Is it a quiz or?
No, just you haven't gotten to talk.
Did you just pinch him? Because I couldn't see.
October 18th.
October 18th, 2020.
Nice.
It's coming up.
What traditions are you not incorporating, or rather, give us a quick summary of the wedding and how it's going to be so Molly and Greg.
So many things.
I don't know how much we want to give away.
Give away.
Okay. All right.
I will defer to you. If
we were going to walk down the aisle together.
That was one, yeah.
Yes.
I think that's very important.
You're not going to be given away.
I'm not going to be given away. Mm-hmm. So we're very excited about that aspect. Mm-hmm. So Greg is Jewish. And so part of a Jewish ceremony is to, you know, the breaking of the glass.
Yes.
And we have a super awesome bag that says smashing the patriarchy. So we're going to put the glass in there and then smash the patriarchy while also, you know, giving kudos to the religious aspect.
Yes. I love that.
So that's, you know, other people can use that. Feel free.
Yeah, these are good tips. Yes, yes.
Tips. So
without telling us more, because your friends and family might listen, I guess, but has there been anything that you felt like you had to, okay, we're going to have to break that to my dad, or we're going to have to tell your parents this is how we're doing it, because they might have, you know, let's give them some time to get used to it. Not that you necessarily are looking for approval, but like, has there been anything where you were like, oh yeah, we like that idea, but it's going to require some finessing?
Greg's over here poking me.
He's got that smile.
Do we want to like
get a really big smile?
A lot of things. A lot of
yeah.
things. But
really?
And some things that like I like when it came to, so I'm going to wear a leather jacket as a cover up.
Nice.
Just because I think that's awesome and I'm really yeah. excited about it. And yeah. it was something that I didn't even think about until I just mentioned it offhand in front of random family members. And it turned out to be a thing that people cared about. It's been a learning experience throughout the whole wedding of planning process of that people have a lot of emotions and a lot of opinions, very strong opinions mm-hmm. about most things. Weddings, and
even though it's not their wedding,
even though it's not their wedding,
no, we hear you. We know yeah. exactly what you're talking about.
You know where we're coming from, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so it's honestly not a matter of I think I need to break this to the parents. It's what's gonna be the next
surprise trigger
pops up. So it's been I think a lot of things we've been trying to keep as a surprise. So that way,
sure.
by the time of the wedding, it's too late. So
yeah, no one's going to be like, that offends me.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Are you working with a wedding planner at all?
We have a day of coordinator.
Does that day of coordinator come with your venue, or did you hire someone?
We're hiring someone.
Awesome. Is that what he or she calls her service? Day of coordinator?
I think they call it month of coordinator, but
very good. Okay. Just checking. Okay. Yeah. Most civilians know this as day of coordination, but us
usually it's about a month of work.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, good. We're happy that you're hiring somebody for that. I'm curious, it just occurred to me that there could have been some sort of How do I phrase this? There could be some old school wedding planners out there that might not be on the same page of this whole like non-traditional, like, you know, feminist way of planning and producing a wedding. Did you find any, I mean, have you, when you're looking to hire your wedding professionals, are you, you know, looking for certain things on their websites or in conversations with them that could be red flags for you?
That's really interesting. I personally didn't consider the fact that some wedding planners would have opinions about, mm-hmm. about the wedding. So
we did send them a link to
the article,
our proposal,
to the proposal article.
And gave got it.
A brief overview. So like they knew what they were getting.
They knew that part. Yeah. In terms of the keywords that we were looking for, we really looked for someone who was very
detail oriented.
That's what we wanted. Type A, detail oriented. Someone very like timely, like mm-hmm. yeah, someone who could handle all.
Who knew their shit?
Yes,
we were looking for that more than their own.
Someone who agreed with
politics,
you, your worldview.
Yeah, we're hoping to have very few political conversations with the wedding planner.
Yeah. Of course not. But I mean, like, yeah, that was what was most important to you. That's just curious as a wedding planner. I'd love to know what people are looking for, like what it is they want. So that's interesting. Okay, cool.
Very good. Final thoughts, y'all, on, or you could ask us something about wedding planning if you had that on your mind.
Feel
well,
free.
We have you, but do you have any, either of you have any final thoughts on the whole topic, you know, apropos of Molly proposing and what all of that, how all that turned out?
I'm really glad I did it. I was honestly quite nervous. It's a lot of stress and a lot of planning. It took me 2 years to plan the whole wedding proposal.
Whoa.
And I know. And there weren't a lot of role models to look to. Every time I went online, there were all these suggestions, but it was always, you know, toward men. And that was kind of a bummer, and it was not as comforting as I wanted it to be. But luckily I have a really great support network, who really cheered me on and was like, oh yeah, this is totally a you guys thing to do. So go for it, make it happen. And I knew that Greg would be just over the moon with the whole proposal. So
Greg's got a great smile. Look at you guys. You like are a full tooth, like Maya.
Listen, Molly, how great is it? For real. Like, you didn't have a lot of role models, but now somebody that Googles woman proposes anything, like, your name is going to come up, and this article and that picture are going to come up, and this podcast, damn it, okay, is going to come up. Yes. And, you know, like, you are going to be that, and you're not even going to know. There's somebody like reading that article right now as they're scrolling, like, can I pull this off? Is this the right choice? And they might get a little like bump or a little encouragement, yeah, and feel that kind of support from a woman that they've never met and never will met, but who knew she wanted to do this, and nevertheless, she persisted. Oh, she did it.
Yeah, that makes me so happy. It's incredibly, that's great.
That's really cool. I'm so glad you guys, I'm so glad it worked out and that you're in the midst of wedding planning now, because that's a whole, you know, different
beast.
Bunch of challenges. Yes. Yes. Opportunities, yes, to learn and grow.
We should ask you though, what's the like the biggest mistake that most couples make when they're planning their wedding?
Ooh. Well,
that is a good question. You're very wise to have a month of coordinator. I mean, if that person is worth their salt, then she will take so much off of your shoulders in those last 4 weeks, which is crucial, because it's those last 4 weeks that family stuff and friend dynamics and some like annoying cousin who's asking you a million questions, like that all comes to a head in the last 4 weeks. And that's not something that a planner can take off your plate. So knowing that you get to just hand over all the logistics will and should feel very like, you should feel an actual, oh, thank God we got to just give her all those contracts and documents and timelines and let her sort it out. So good on you for doing that. And don't be afraid to reach out to that coordinator in those 4 weeks with big and small questions, you know, because that's what we're there for when we're hired as month of, like, truly your life ring for that last month.
I think the biggest mistake couples make is where the budget is concerned. First of all, not doing the right research and really coming up with a realistic budget. And then planning your wedding around what that budget is, as opposed to what a lot of people do,
what
is
you
the
wish
opposite.
It was.
Like, I want this and I want that and this and that. So that's, I would say, number one mistake. And I would say number two mistake, and we get people writing about this all the time, is allowing family members to really get at you and to cause conflict in your heart and then within your relationship. For example, I just answered a listener email the other day of someone who has divorced parents, and, you know, dad, you know, wants to bring his fiance to the wedding, but mom and dad don't get along, and, you know, it's going to cause this big thing. And so the mom and the dad are putting the daughter in this position of like, well, you better decide. And I told her, fuck that. You know what? Tell them to decide. Pull yourself out of it. Say, yeah, this is between you all. I'm not going to be in the middle of it. So those are two big ones for me that I think it's just really hard. There's so many emotions involved in this. So,
and we hear from couples after the wedding too, a lot, which is wonderful. And we hope we hear from you too, but that will tell us like the best thing I did was this or that. And almost everyone can agree afterwards that it goes by really fast, and allowing time in that timeline that you will work, you know, you'll put that together with your coordinator, allowing time in there to look at each other, like have a minute when it's just the two of you, like eat or, you know, enjoy each other on the wedding day also, where you're not pulled in a million chins and it's like, pose here, come here, do this, toast this, dance this. And you don't have time to actually like breathe and enjoy the moment. So those that try to work that in ahead of time in their timeline and their day felt like it was a worthy you know, it was a good thing that they did ahead of time. You can't plan for everything, but if you give yourself buffer time, then there'll be more opportunity on the wedding day to like step outside for a second and take a deep breath, or like, you know, go up onto the roof of the venue and look at the view, or whatever it is that might make it feel to you two that you get to like stop time for just a second and be like, oh my gosh, we just did this thing, or, you know, yeah, that felt amazing or whatever. So that's maybe some tangible ideas you can work out with your coordinator too.
Good pro tips.
That's
Thank you.
Definitely a good one.
You get those for free.
Yeah. Those ones, those were free. And then we charge on by the hour. Very good. You guys, thank you so much, both of you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it's been great chatting with y'all.
Yeah. We look forward to seeing wedding photos next year. No, that's this year.
Yeah.
In October.
Mm-hmm. October.
Wow. Okay. And cool. Let us know if you have questions as you go, and we'll keep you updated if people send us questions or comments for you too.
Awesome. Yeah, that's wonderful. Send us the link so we can share with our friends.
Yes, we will. Please subscribe on iTunes if you're listening to this as a one-off. We would love a subscription, a rating, and a review. We say it every episode. It really matters to our numbers. It matters to get to the top of iTunes search engine. So please do that if you have a second. On Instagram, we are at the Big Wedding Planning Podcast. You'll be able to see a photo there of Molly and Greg, hopefully, if we can get that photo. Otherwise, the links to Molly's website and the Washington Post article are on our website as well, which is thebigweddingplanningpodcast.com. There's a search engine there if you're looking for a specific topic, and every show includes show notes and links to our guests. Our email is thebigweddingplanningpodcast@gmail.com. That's the best way to get in touch with us with any questions or comments. If you would like to support the podcast, we welcome you to contribute via Patreon, patreon.com/thebigweddingpodcast. There's a monthly donation, $5, $1, $10, and it helps us keep this podcast alive. Also, we have a phone number if you want to call that. Leave us a voicemail, and that might end up on a You Ask, We Answer episode at the end of every month. That number is
415-723-1625. And that is it. Happy planning, everyone. Christy, love you, love your show.
Bye.